Hello, Sarah. Welcome, everyone, listening to a new edition, a new episode, a new release, a new just little download of the Celebrant Talk Show. My name is not important because this one much more important on the episode with me, and her name is Sarah Aird. Good morning. Good afternoon, Sarah.
It's true. I am important. Hello, everybody.
You don't have to be told.
And, but I think we'll also allow that Josh Withers is also important.
I'm just here for the crumbs off the master's table, Sarah. Just whatever may fall my way, if I could just have a crumb.
Yeah, pretty lucky to get the crumbs. Yeah, let's face it. So I think we're streaming live on the Book of Face as well as recording our podcast today. It is Saturday, the 1st of August, just after midday. And, well, the world is cray-cray.
The world is cray-cray. It's been maybe 6-odd weeks since we last recorded an episode.
Actually, it was the 2nd of June.
Was it the 2nd of June? Okay, mm-hmm. Wow.
So 8 weeks.
Months. I hate it when podcasters do this and they're like, sorry, it's been so long since we did an episode. And so I'm not going to apologize.
We do that every time.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not apologizing because, you know what, it's a free podcast and we do what we can. But I've got to be honest with you, Sam. It's been a lot just to kind of exist on the planet. And so whether we're talking about recording podcasts or actually doing the job that we, before COVID, the job we thought we had, or just everything in between, I'm like, I'm exhausted. Like, I'm like emotionally, like I'm spiritually exhausted. Like, my soul is spent. It's been a crazy couple of months, eh?
Absolutely. And I don't think that's just us. I think that goes for everybody across the country and across the world. I know Melbourne's been in our second lockdown since the 9th of July, so it's been 3 and a bit weeks, and there's been quite a bit of media about why does it feel so much harder this time? You know, we've done this. We did this in March, and we coped, but it just feels tougher, even though we know what we need to do, we know what's expected, we know the rules. People apparently know the rules but aren't following them. But it just seems to be tougher, and it's exhausting. Today, the police minister in Victoria was talking about some of the fines that were issued yesterday. Somebody drove from Melbourne to Wodonga to buy a Big Mac.
Wow.
So, 4-hour drive.
Are the burgers better at Wodonga? Is that how it works?
Somebody drove from Melbourne to Ballarat to get some fresh air.
The air is fresher at Ballarat.
Sure.
I can, as someone who's done weddings there, I have friends there, I can tell you the air is fresher.
Sure.
Some people would say less used.
It's
less
more
people. Organic. It's people, yeah.
And somebody drove from Werribee to Springvale, which is like 50-60 Ks, to buy groceries. Now, I know that there are a lot of great Asian supermarkets in Springvale. No, not a good reason right now. Don't do that. Don't do that.
It's so different in Queensland where I am because we're having our own moment with the girls that jumped the border and didn't say they'd been in Melbourne, and so that's kind of kicking off a bit of a it's like a COVID revival, you know. We're having COVID revival meetings around Southeast Queensland, but we're nowhere near Melbourne State. And yeah, I podcasted with a friend earlier this week. Our podcast shout out. The Wedding Photo Hangover. I was a guest on there this week, and I was kind of boasting at that point. I think it was before the two girls had jumped the border, and we were in a pretty good position in Queensland. Like, we had like one or two cases, and we're like, we're just going to sit this out. But that's all changed this week. So what a time to be alive.
Absolutely. And we are anticipating in Melbourne that they're going to introduce even greater restrictions tomorrow, and I will record another update to add to this episode if that does happen. we don't yet know what that looks like, and I'm not going to speculate on what that looks like because there's really no point. There are so many different options, and I'm certainly not a public health expert, so I'm not going to speculate, but if there are any additional restrictions that make any difference to the work of a celebrant, I'll record an addendum to add on to this episode then.
We should do some housekeeping at the top because we've kind of just dived straight in. This is the Celebrant Talk Show, in case you've stumbled across this randomly through some kind of podcast auto selection. This audio has just been piped and you're like, who the F are these guys? Sarah Ed, Josh Withers. We run the Celebrant Institute. The website is celebrant.institute. And this podcast is a free podcast that comes out of that paid membership for the Celebrant Institute. And you can listen to other episodes at celebrant.fm. I just like to kind of ground everyone because I know that there's some new members coming on. There's new people joining. And Sarah is also the CEO and are we calling you the headmistress? I'm going to call you the headmistress.
Okay.
of life skills training. And I help you with some tech stuff there. But this is just a talk show about celebrancy for celebrants by celebrants. And I know other people listen. And well, you guys have to leave now. It's yeah. Giddy up. I'm joking.
We are eternally grateful for anyone who listens.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's just a bit of a chat about the world of celebrancy. And I remember when we first started doing this podcast and we started doing the Celebrant Institute, we were just like up and up and up and up, like the world's getting better. Like years ago, you know, like celebrancy is in such a good place. Like just the number of couples being married by celebrants every year was getting better and better. And the marketplace for celebrants was improving so much. Like can we compare to when I became a celebrant and then when you became a celebrant, Sarah, like the market is full of great people, like awesome humans that are doing great work as celebrants. And it's interesting because I used to really capitalize on the fact that I just did something different and now everyone's doing something different and I can't capitalize on that because everyone's different now and we have to stand on our own merits, which is arguably a much stronger position for the industry to be in. But I'm so proud of that. And
interestingly, one of my Cert 4 students yesterday was saying to me, I just want to ask you, I'm not really keen on doing weddings that are really kind of traditional and like what you see on TV. Like I really want to do things that are a bit more left of center. Is there a market for that? Yes.
Is there a market?
Yes, there is. You're good to go.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's literally the only market.
Yeah, that is the market now.
Yeah,
and yay. Yay that that's the market.
Yeah. So, you know, it was like the last couple of years, I would say, have been the best years to be not only in the wedding industry, but as a marriage celebrant. Like it's been good. And I'm proud to say you and I can take a little bit of credit for that. But honestly, like I'm not going to say like it's our doing, but we've certainly ridden that wave with so many other great celebrants. And it kind of pains me to record this today because I see either publicly or just some personal conversations, I see so many of our cohort not doing as well, you know, just not having as good of a time. And that sucks. Like I personally can sit here and talk of my woes and I don't know if I will. I hope I don't, but I can sit here and tell you about all my issues. But I know so many of our cohort do, and I'm like, this is a weird and a terrible and a weird time to be a celebrant, and I'm hoping we can find some opportunity in all that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm seeing lots of kind of elopement businesses popping up, which is really great. People are taking on board the fact that we might be doing smaller weddings for a long time to come. And, you know, they're leveraging off that. And I think that's really great. People are looking for other opportunities. And I think that's really important. You know, now, if you've ever thought, for example, about being a celebrant trainer, now is the time to go and get your training and assessment qualification.
Worst qualification ever. I hate it.
Terrible, awful to do it, but it's a means to an end. And right now, while you're sitting around with not a lot of weddings to do, this is the time. You know, if you've ever thought about doing some professional development in how to be a good and great MC, for example, if that's something that you'd like to add to your services, this is the time to go and do that development, seek out that additional training and, you know, and make the time to do that stuff while we are kind of sitting around, well, while some people are sitting around with not a lot to do, I wish sometimes that I was sitting around with not a lot to do. But you're in a different place.
Having bought life skills training earlier this year, I feel like your calendar's been a little bit more full than many of us. But
a little bit different, but that's okay.
We've got a list of topics we want to kind of get into, but I wanted to just start on this note that I because I can sit here and say that my business, or the Brit and my business, has been directly affected so much. And I didn't want to make this a pity party for me. But if you want to have one, give me a call. I've got a great pity party to have. Directly to people listening, to celebrants, and even wedding industry people, like I've spent a lot of time in the training and kind of empowerment side of the wedding industry with all, you know, photographers, videographers. If you're just feeling like, if you've got feelings, just full stop. like if we're friends, or even if we're not friends, and my phone number's public, I really do feel that I just want to kind of be a sounding board, because I feel like there's a lot of silence. Like, so many of us have got friends, like almost all of my friends are not affected by COVID financially. They're all like, they're in businesses that are booming. You know, one of my close friends is in mountain bikes, and he's like, yeah, sales are through the roof.
There's a global shortage of bike parts.
Yeah. they all have empathy, and like they know where we're at, but I'm like, I don't feel like all of my friends know where we're at, really. Just because they don't know the wedding industry, and so
they can't
look. Yeah, like if there's people listening, you're like, I feel really alone in all this. Shoot us an email, a DM, a phone. Like, I would hope that I would have a legacy in the wedding industry as being the random guy that talks to people later, not on the phone, about weird issues with their phone call, with their business. Sorry. And, you know, I'm proud of that. Cause I think sometimes just having a third kind of opinion, like a different view into your business, can help. You know, like I've got a number of friends that are talking about leaving the industry, and I'm always trying to convince them that we just need to hold our breath through this, and we need to figure out how to survive through this. But there will be a wedding industry at the end, and it'll need talented, creative, skilled people that know how to run a sustainable, good business. And so I suppose I just wanted to put that out at the start, that I'm available, and Sarah, like you're more available. I know you're not actually physically more available, but you've been a bigger sounding board for people in the industry for more than I have, and so. You know, I just want to be an encouragement to people. Like, don't give up. We're going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm seeing quite a bit in kind of Victorian wedding industry groups on Facebook. There seems to be quite a lot of defeatism at the moment, and quite a lot of, you know, I'm done, and I don't know when this will be back. And
which is valid.
It is. It's totally valid. Something that's been breaking my heart the most is people who are saying, I worked, you know, for 30 years doing something that I hated, and I finally found something that I love, and now I can't do it, you know, and that's really heartbreaking.
That's literally how I, like, across, like, I can talk about financial things, like the financial impact on our business is coming close to $100,000. And I can talk about, you know, our plans for international travel. But probably the daily thing that gets me is that like that story you just said, I have worked my life, my entire life, to come to a place where I can have a job that I'm really good at, that I really like, that other people really like. And so I just wake up in the morning and I have a win. Like, and I'm not ashamed of that. Like, I feel like a lot of people are trying to get there. And I'm proud to say that after many, 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 many years of struggle and work, I got there. You know, I would wake up and I would have a great life at a great job. And I don't do that today. Like, I'm not going to work. I'm not allowed to do the thing that I'm really good at, that I feel like when I do a ceremony, I feel really good. And I'm not doing that at the moment. That sucks.
I think it's a bit more difficult with what we do, but other creatives in the industry, photographers, videographers, florists, other kinds of creatives, I would encourage you to still try and practice your craft, still try and do your thing. Even though you can't shoot weddings, you could go and shoot sunsets or, you know, blades of grass in the backyard or your kids doing fun stuff. Like, still try to be creative.
But then, like, I've got a friend who's a photographer, and he was saying, like, he feels bitter about his camera. Like, the pandemic's not his camera's fault, but there's this kind of link to all of this failure and pain, and it's kind of linked to my camera.
That's also heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, the world is hard. The world is hard. We see it. We acknowledge it. We see you, and we're here. Yeah. We're here for you. Yeah.
So we've got a show planned. Do you want to jump into it?
We do. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about shit for 15 minutes. So let's maybe talk about some of the things.
Item number one, an impassioned plea to the world, to not just the celebrant industry. I've seen this in the celebrant industry, but also to the world, to all that are watching, to all that are listening, to all that are enjoying this. Can I ask that we please would not make branded face masks a thing? I don't want to see celebrants with logos on their face masks. Someone questioned me on the Celebrant Institute social media. Did you see this?
No.
An officiant in America goes, why? I said, it's just my opinion. Just don't. It's terrible.
It's like I'm seeing it across the board in business. It's not just in the wedding industry. People are talking about branded face masks. I think we have to wear masks, make them funky and make them fashionable and make them part of your outfit. Do we have to have a brand on everything?
No. Like, there's a reason that as I begin a marriage ceremony, I don't do a shout out to McDonald's. like not everything has to be commercial. Like, not everything has to be corporate and branded. And I've seen a few, because you've sent me through a few screenshots, and I've seen a few people talking about it, and I'm like, we need to nip this in the bud right now. I'm going to say that stylish face masks, I'm okay with. Like, there's a company, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, Bundara. Our friend Sean shared a Facebook post about them, and they do Australian First Nations art on the face mask. Like, that's cool. Like, I'm in on that. I've got a nice floral one, which...
I'm loving the face mask and tie combination.
Thank you. Yeah,
the matching mask and tie, and even if you're really up for it, the pocket square as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, have all three.
Shout out to Edward Kahn for that, because she does great work. But, yeah, and look, even if you're on the side of not wearing a mask, and, like, that's cool. Like, at least you own the fact you're part of the problem. But just let's not make logoed masks a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah.
Well, yeah, if you've got anything to add, you're like, yeah, nah. that's enough.
I'm just with you. Funky face mask, yes. Branded, not so much. Yeah. I'm just not. Yeah, I'm not here for branded masks. And look, people are probably going to yell at us about this, and they're going to say, I can put my brand on whatever I want. You totally can. This is just this is only our opinion.
It is only our opinion. Okay, next topic, Sarah.
The next topic is about, and this is actually a really serious one. I had a phone call yesterday from a venue owner in Melbourne, because not only celebrants ring me about the legalities of what we can and can't do during this time, but other people do as well. And she said she had a couple who had booked and fully paid for their $30,000 wedding at her venue, which they've now postponed to next year, but they still want to do their ceremony on the same day. And she's trying to accommodate them and allow them to use the venue because they've paid up front and blah, blah, blah. Now, whether or not this is true, the bride has told her that the celebrant has told them nobody needs to wear a mask during the ceremony. That's incorrect. And that the celebrant has told her that the photographer can be an extra person who's just in the distance. So, in Melbourne at the moment, we're allowed to have 5 people at a wedding, the celebrant, the couple, and their 2 witnesses. That includes any photographer, videographer. That's included in the 5. It's not extra. This is not about having an audience or about having your friends there or about having both sets of parents or about having, well, I want my two best friends to be the witness, so we'll have the photographer, but he'll just be far away from us. No, 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 no. Now, whether the celebrant has actually advised this bride that or she's just telling the venue owner that he has, please, wedding professionals, be professional. Be professional, follow the rules. Part of our code of practice for marriage celebrants, which is part of the Marriage Regulations 2017, states that we have to abide by the laws of the Commonwealth and the state or territory in which the marriage is performed. If a celebrant was found at a wedding not wearing a mask, not telling everybody else they didn't have to wear a mask, allowing other people to be there, they've broken the law of the state or territory in which the marriage is performed, and I think they could reasonably be deregistered. Don't risk your registration on a bride saying, but I don't want to wear a mask because it's not very pretty. I don't care. It's not worth your registration. And that's really what we're talking about here. We're not talking about, oh, it'll be okay because it's on a private property and no one will see it. People are doing, like, we know from lockdown one that the cops were doing drive-through patrols of the cemeteries. They were literally driving through the cemeteries looking for, are there too many people at that graveside? And if they saw 11 or 12 people at that graveside, they were fining the funeral director $11,000. So this is really important. And we also have to remember the purpose of these rules. They're not to be inconvenient. They're not to make to ruin your wedding day. They're not any of those things. There, so you don't end up dead.
I can't help but feel that the advice we've been giving since the early, early times of COVID continues to apply, that the only place you should be sourcing your information regarding COVID restrictions and whatnot and lockdowns and whatnot is just from the relevant government department. That I, as a celebrant, I would be like, of trying to minimize how much I've communicated about lockdowns because, well, A, they change day to day, but B, I don't know as much as everyone else. Like, I just don't know, and people don't pay me to know about COVID-19 lockdowns. Not my job.
Spot on. And I think I've spoken to quite a few celebrants who've found themselves in trouble because they've told their couple, oh, yeah, you can do that, and then they've gone, maybe I should check that. And they've rung me and I've gone, mm-mm. And here is the written legislation that says that you can't do that. And here's the link that I'm sending to you. And now they've got to go back to their couple and go, oh, I told you the wrong thing. So you're actually better not to tell your couple anything. You're better to tell your couple, go in Victoria, go to the DHHS COVID website and or ring the COVID hotline. What's get your own advice.
And health and...
Health and Human Services.
Department
of Health and Human Services.
They've just got a little wrapped up there. They're like Hawaii, like marriages happen in Hawaii through the health department.
There you go. Department of Health and Human Services. So go tell them to go there. Tell them to ring the COVID hotline. You know, don't find yourself in a situation where a couple does the wrong thing and then they go, but my celebrant told me I could.
Yeah. It's just not our job to know everything. Like I can't help but feel that there's a real culture these days of individuals feeling the need to be the people that are on Facebook that know everything. And I'm more than happy to tell people that I don't know everything. I'm proud of how much I don't know because it's just not my job to know everything and it's not your job. And so I would just try and minimize how much you take responsibility for, because that's what you're doing. You're taking responsibility for someone else's lawful actions, and more often than not we're wrong, and what, let's just avoid that and just not be wrong or right in the first place and just say I don't know. Like, I think this is actually like a wider thing for humanity. Celebrants, business people, I think we should become more and more comfortable with just saying I don't know, because we just don't know.
Simple and I think also that I know we want to be helpful And I know that we want to take pressure off our couples wherever we can. And we, and so there are a lot of celebrants who are willing to go the extra mile and do the work for them. And while that's great and I applaud it, only do that if you're actually prepared to dig into the legislation. That's what I do. I don't give advice just because I read it somewhere, unless I've read it in the legislation, or unless, you know, that the big post I put up when we last went into restrictions was because I'd had a lengthy conversation with the COVID hotline and his supervisor about what the rules were going to be. So, you know, I do give a lot of advice and information, but it's because I haven't just gone, oh, but that person on Facebook said. I've done the homework and I've looked at the legislation. So I think that we just need to be a little bit careful about doing too much for our couples. We do need to give them some responsibility.
Because you're not the wedding planner. You're just the celebrant. And not to minimize your job, but you're not the wedding planner.
Our job is to get them married and to follow the Marriage Act. And our job is not to, we've discussed this before, our job is not to make sure they show you three types of ID and make sure that they're here on the correct visa. And none of those things are our job. So, yeah, just, and by doing those, you minimize your liability by, you know, not giving too much information, by not giving too much advice. You do minimize your liability because we really are in a situation now where couples are taking wedding suppliers to court. And
I've got a bunch of them if you want to talk.
That's it. But and I think that they're taking them to court right now about contracts and postponements and cancellations. But I suspect that if a couple got fined for a wedding situation and they said, but my celebrant told me, that they could take them to court for that. So I think we just need to be a bit careful.
I can speak to that directly in that a number, like the documents we've received regarding the court cases, they've quoted us an early like March and whatnot. Because we've talked about this before, I was really, really optimistic back then. And they're quoting me saying, like, you said, you know, I'm like, well, yeah, I also, like, I wasn't stupid back then. I also said, we don't know what we don't know. And when we know something, we'll know something. I wasn't really drawing a line in the sand, but I was overly optimistic and they're holding me to that optimism. And it's fine. But yeah, just the less you say, the better. So, yeah, I would stop giving terrible advice and minimize the advice you do expose yourself to because every time you do that, like, you know, we've probably heard financial advice, people that talk about financial advice, like podcasts and whatnot. I've got a friend that has one and he starts every episode by saying, I am not a financial planner. That's just him saying that here's some good ideas, but I'm not a financial planner. So you can't hold me account for that.
You should see my Cert 4 manual. I've got like a whole section on building a sustainable business. And it's got stuff about tax and expenses and income and blah, blah, blah. And before literally every paragraph, it says, this is not official advice. Get your own advice. Please don't take this seriously. Like, it's just some thoughts. Yeah, just be careful. Be careful is the biggest thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Next topic.
Let's move on because we do have some other topics.
I've been throwing this idea around in my head for a while, and I've wanted to make it a thing on the Celebrant Institute, but I haven't wanted to kind of like publish a post yet because it's a forever evolving topic, and also look, I'll be honest with you, I haven't written as much on the Celebrant Institute recently because it's been hard to kind of separate my external thoughts, like here's some good ideas for all celebrants, and my own personal thoughts, and just like the kind of the pain that we've had, you know, in life. And so things like this are kind of rattled around my head. And as we were preparing for the podcast today, I thought, oh, maybe this is a good thing to talk about here. And maybe talking about it with you might result in a whole article for the Celebrant Institute. But I was just thinking about preparing for the aftertime, whatever that looks like. And I'm not putting a date on it. I'm not going to say 2021 or whatever, but the aftertime, the after all this is through, and things we can be doing today to kind of prepare for that. You know, it's like if I told you I was going to run a marathon next June, we've got, you know, 12 odd months to do something about it. There was things I would start doing today to prepare for that marathon next June or July or whatever. And so I just wanted to kind of riff on that idea. I've got a few ideas, and Sarah, then I'll let you back up with a few, okay? The first idea is around the lines of if you've got a really good system in place, you're more able to turn in the future. You're able to make a left or right turn a lot easier. The example I was thinking about, like if you got a rally car or a race car, you know, you see action movies and they're driving, you know, it's like a really expensive car. Those babies turn on a dime. Like, you know, you'll see them in the action movie kind of, you know, go down a side street just by turning the steering wheel. If you do that in the 1988, you know, Hyundai XL, won't turn on a dime because the system in the car, like, it's just not finely tuned enough to be able to make a change. And what I'm talking about is there's talk about the future wedding industry being many things, about it being a more budget industry, about it being the same, about it being more extravagant, and all those, they're just three really simplified versions of what a future wedding industry could look like. And none of us know. Like, if you kind of stake your claim on one, you're wrong. Well, not you're wrong, we just don't know. But if we make sure that today we've got a really good kind of business system, like a friend of mine, Glenn, is running a workshop on business operating systems. And if you've got a really good business operating system, like just your base premise, like if you think about the car, like the wheels and the chassis, and like if your basic thing is really good, when you need to make a turn all of a sudden, because we've got fresh information that they're afraid that the future wedding industry is cheap or expensive or blah, 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 then you can make that change. You can make that turn really easily. So that's one thought. Another thought is that there's things we could be doing today to solidify our base, to make sure that our current foundation is really strong so that we're more nimble in the future. And I mean that from a marketing kind of branding, like position in the market kind of place. And two thoughts on that. One is if we are celebrants. There's people watching and listening that aren't celebrants, and so hear what we are. We are the people that celebrate. Like we literally use our mouth to breathe life into the community around us. Like we speak, and because we speak, there is life. We, you know, with our words and with our personality, we breathe life into the society. They might sound a little bit spiritual, soulful, whatever, hippy dippy, but I'm like, oh, look, well, we talk, and because we talk, things happen that are nice, you know, if you want to make it a little bit more pragmatic. So whether it's through social media, whether it's through creating your own podcast or blogging, all of the mediums available to you, and that includes medium.com, you know, as a blogging platform, all of, you know, YouTube, Anchor for podcasting, all the different social media things. Like there's a new Instagram feature launching soon, and I've just forgotten the name of it. Instagram Loop, I think. Anyway, it's like a TikTok replacement. All the different tools and platforms available for you. If you were to bring that celebrant mindset, that opportunity to actually celebrate, and I'm talking about couples we have married, couples we are marrying, but also the wider industry. I think there's a really big opportunity there for us as celebrants to celebrate the industry. I saw someone, a podcast to listen to. They were talking about different ways you can look at collaborating with people. And she just said these basic things. Identify a business every day. So, you know, we might say in the wedding industry, identify a business every day that you'd like to work with. Give them a Google review. Like, do a search on Google My Business. Find them. Give them a 5-star review. Say something nice about them in the review. Give them a Facebook review. Do a Facebook and Instagram post about them. Do a story about them. Write a blog post about them. Record a video. Collab with them on a podcast or a video or blog post or something like that. Celebrate the community you're in. And that involves you getting over yourself, me getting over myself. There's a reason I haven't done this a whole lot. Like, I'm really wrapped up in our current world. But if you were to get over yourself and celebrate the wider community, I think that's you acting on your base premise as a celebrant. Like, do the thing that you're kind of like the gift you've got. And the third thing, which is the same thing, but more so couple-wise, be the people that are just celebrating marriage online. Like in a time when like people are struggling, there's like, I've already had, I know one of my couples who are legally, I might've mentioned it in the last podcast. I can't remember, but they were legally married by me in Australia because we were supposed to do their wedding in Italy. Did I mention this in the last podcast?
No. Mention it again. It's good.
I legally married them in Australia because we were supposed to do the wedding in Italy. Italy obviously didn't happen. Rescheduled to Byron Bay. A couple of weeks beforehand, they break up. They're getting divorced.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. Like, just COVID. Like, it's...
COVID pressure.
There's, yeah. I've got a friend who's a chaplain. He told me last night that 8 people a day in Australia are committing suicide. Which is like, it's a number that gets thrown around, but like I've got a friend who I'm like just keeping an eye on, like I'm like kind of talking to him through COVID. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not going to say, you know, I've got him on suicide watch, but I'm like, a few of the things you've said have kind of worried me. So I'm just going to keep more in touch with you. So be that person that would just celebrate marriage in our community. And I've the last point I'm actually going to bring up is a whole separate topic at the end. But yeah, like, have you got any thoughts around the after time, preparing for that? And I could probably expand more. I've got a topic that I wanted to talk about customer journey in regards to Gail's question. So I'll kind of expand on the business operating system thing in a second. But I don't know, is there anything on your mindset?
I think I'm so in the we don't know what it's going to look like that I can't even think about it. But I have seen some chatter in some groups because a lot of people are doing really great stuff keeping their social media up to date. I am not doing well at that at all. But some people are doing really great, you know, oh, remember when I married these great people and it was so lovely. And like, they're doing a really good job posting all of their old pictures and just reminding people what an amazing wedding can look like. And I've seen some chatter saying maybe as an industry or as celebrants, we need to stop posting lots of photos of big extravagant weddings because they're not things that can happen right now. And we need to be doing our best to show people that actually a small intimate wedding can be just as wonderful as a big extravagant one. And so there's some chatter about if you do have photos of small intimate weddings, if you do have stories about the value of keeping the guest list small and just having your very favorite people and things like that, that we put those things out into the world to show people that actually we can still get married during this time can still be great.
Yeah, definitely. Like, to highlight the fact that it's way better to have a marriage than a wedding. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. And that, you know, your wedding plans don't actually have to be put off until after COVID because A, we don't know if that's ever going to be a thing. And B, you can still have a beautiful, valuable, incredible celebration of your love without 200 people and a dance floor.
Can I just briefly apologize for background noise in my house? Because of COVID, I don't have an office anymore. I'm recording at the kitchen table. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can see my kitchen in the background. But I've got a heavily, well, she's not heavily, but she is heavily pregnant wife. When I say heavily, I mean she's like just pregnancy is all of her life at the moment. She's just so beautifully cute. So if you can hear a snore, that's her. And then in the background is my daughter, Luna, who is supposed to be asleep. She's not. And because Brit's asleep, she's not aware that she's coughing or anything like that. Like, the whole thing is kind of beautiful. And to be honest with you, I'm really proud of where we're at. Like, I don't really care about the background noise. This is real life.
No, we don't care about it at all. This is your life. It's fine. And it's lovely and it's delightful.
It is.
More Luna. You know we want Luna.
We also need her to sleep, though, so God bless her.
That is a good point, yeah. So, yeah, for me, it's not it's not so much preparing for the after time, except for what I said earlier about take this opportunity to do any training, professional development.
And I'm going to say it.
Like what we're about to talk to.
Do your bloody OPD. Just...
Oh, do your OPD, like, get it
I'm
done.
I'm getting sick of people talking about waiting to do OPD when they can do it face-to-face.
Waiting.
Just do it.
I don't, to be honest, and I'm not calling it yet, but I really feel like we're not doing face-to-face OPD in Victoria this year and potentially in New South Wales as well. I'm not calling it yet. I've still got dates on the calendar. I'm still happy to advertise those, but I can't guarantee they're going ahead. And it's looking less and less likely that they will every day. But do your professional development, do your create your systems, get everything up to date, but also consider putting messages out there into the world about the value of keeping it small. And the fact that it's okay to do that, the fact that you actually don't have to have a wedding with 200 people on a dance floor in order to create a beautiful marriage.
Yeah, it's actually a really, really good opportunity to realize, like, what does this all mean? You know, I've done a few podcasts and vlogs about this, like look at everything really critically. And as much as, like, I'm such a proponent for, like, just get married now, it's also... Sorry, just listening to the snore. It's kind of so cute.
We okay, can't good, hear good. It, so it's fine.
That as much as it's a powerful time to just get married, there's the human experience is one of community, where when important and valuable things happen in our life, we ask for our people to come and care for us and to love on us and to gift us and to just to encourage us. And that's what a wedding is. Like, a wedding is me saying, hey guys, next weekend at 3 p.m., can you come and care about me? Can you come and give a shit about me for a couple of hours? And like, that is an important part of the human experience. And so one angle would say we need to figure out how to do that differently. And one angle would say, putting things on pause isn't the worst thing going around, and everyone has to make their own personal decisions about that. But yeah, it's a really good opportunity just to look at things critically.
Totally. And I think also that I'm already hearing in my head other wedding vendors going, but we need big weddings so that we can still work. I don't actually agree with that either. I think that you can have a 20-person wedding and still have a cake and a florist and a photographer and a videographer and even live musicians and cars and beautiful outfits and all the other things that go into a big wedding. You can still have all of those things just with less people. So I think that, you know, I think this is, yeah, time for people to take stock about what's most important. If having 200 people there on a dance floor is what's most important to them, by all means, put pause on it. That's okay. I'm not saying that that's not okay, but I am saying that that we do need to look at other ways.
Yeah. Okay. Gail wrote in asking about, because in a way, way, way earlier podcast, I mentioned that I was using Todoist. And Todoist is a to-do app. The reason I've chosen Todoist is because of LinkedIn with other online services and blah, blah, blah. And so it was all very kind of interconnected and cool. And so when someone made a booking, it could create to-dos and Todoist and blah, blah, blah. But she was asking about how I use Todoist. And I replied and I wrote on the Celebrant Institute that I'm not using Todoist anymore because I've got a whole customer relationship management software called Dubsado. And if you've probably heard me talk about this before, if you're a long time listener of the podcast, that I don't mind Dubsado. I'm not one to say everyone needs to use Dubsado. You use Tave, Sarah, and there's other valid and good, CRMs, products. And, I'm not actually a proponent of any of them particularly. Like, there's some things, if you want to talk about PA systems, big proponent of a certain setup. But when it comes to CRM, I'm like I don't mind Dubsado. If I was starting again today, I think I'd use Dubsado, but I probably would have spent a little bit more time looking at Tave, and who knows, having not looked at Tave, maybe I'd be all in on Tave. So I didn't want to speak specifically to Dubsado and to-do items, but something I kind of mentioned in Gail's article, and it's something that I've done workshops on, I've talked about before, and I'm going to mention a little bit more. I'm probably going to record a video for the Celebrant Institute, and I think saying it in the podcast will force me to do it because I've said it. But I wanted to talk about...
That's never meant anything before. Let's just point out.
Everyone can hold me accountable to this. But the reason this is important is because we've had a few clients lately. Like, one of my couples I'm marrying this coming week. They haven't obeyed this due to us not forcing it on them, and them actively trying to escape it. But they haven't had a customer journey. They're people that just wanted to do everything asked about front. They wanted to start at the end and finish at the start, and it's been a terrible experience. And as I've thought about it, I thought, you know, we need to talk about this more, because this makes for a pleasant industry, a pleasant business, a pleasant job. And I also want to talk about it because I mentioned at scale, about creating a customer journey. So can we spend a few seconds talking about that?
Please.
I view a good customer journey like a slippery dip, like a slippery slide. It's always funny watching you put the movable desk up and down. Like, it's such a weird video view. Like, for those of you not watching on Facebook Live, you missed out on Sarah adjusting the height of a desk. You're like,
I've got a fancy sit-stand desk, and I stand up sometimes, and I've got to move it. It's all very fancy. Great. I'm very fancy. Anyway, slippery dip.
I view a customer journey as a slippery dip because I like the inflection point being the top of the slippery dip. See, an important part of the journey is climbing up the slippery dip, but then there's this really enjoyable part where you just go wee and you slide down the slippery dip. So I wanted to talk to that a little bit to kind of get everyone thinking about their own business and what customer journey they can put people on. Because when you create a journey, you create a unified experience for everyone. So everyone has the same high quality experience. But then also you create ease for you, because just like if you're at a theme park or if you're professionally operating a slippery dip, you don't have to take into account all the different options. You can say, we just do this one thing really well, and everyone has a high quality experience because you've planned a thought out experience. I've been taking Luna to theme parks a lot recently because we've had time off, and I'm always impressed that every ride has got this customer journey, like, go this way. This is the way you go if you want to get on the ride. So in your business, think about the how you on-ramp people, like get them on to the slippery dip. That's the stairs up the slippery dip. That's sales and marketing, but making an inquiry, how you reply to an inquiry, the backing and the forthing, making a Zoom meeting or a FaceTime or meeting in person or whatever it might be, to how you actually book them in, to writing down the slippery dip. At the start, you want to start people taking those steps up the slide to actually getting on the slippery dip. The first step is that, hey, you exist as a celebrant. Can I book you, or are you available? And then how you reply is you reaffirming the customer journey, where you might say, no, I'm not available. Please go away. I hate you. Don't say that. Don't do that. Or it might be saying, yes, I am available. And how do you respond? I respond with an email saying, yes, I'm available. I actually send them a video email because that's really personal. And I say, if you'd like to book me, check out my information pack. Once you've checked that out, hit reply and we'll find a time to meet. I send them the information pack because that not only contains my prices, but also a fairly detailed dossier of who I am and how I work. And if people aren't the right fit for me, they generally just don't reply, or they reply saying, sorry, we found someone else, or whatever it might be. But that's good, because if the information pack keeps you in the conversation, then the rest of the customer journey is automatically easy. It's kind of like, you know, when you walk up to a ride at a theme park and it says you have to be above, you know, 120 centimeters high or something. The theme park, the information pack, sorry, is a little bit like that. It's like, oh, you've got to be this kind of person to book Josh. And so immediately I exclude some people. So only the right people are walking down the path to booking me. The customer journey from there is I want to meet. I love to meet my couples and make sure that they get along with me and they like me. Occasionally that happens in person because, you know, that's a nice thing to do. But a lot more of my meetings, I'd say more than half of my meetings today would be over Zoom or FaceTime. I've got an appointment scheduler through Dubsado where I send them and say, hey, book in here. And then to actually Zoom meet with me, like you did today, you click, there's a link that I send you. And you click the link, and it's just a really short domain name I can tell you over the phone. And you click that link, and it connects you to my Zoom, and we have a meeting. And I end that meeting with the next step on my customer journey. which is, if you'd like to book me, do this. Once again, reaffirming the whole journey. And then if they choose to book me, then that's them choosing to ride down the slippery dip of the wee and having so much fun. And that it speaks more to what Gail was asking about having to-do items. And the customer journey extends once they book you or book me, because I want every client to have the same high-quality journey that I'm held accountable to. The first step being a notice of intent, second step being planning, third step being just a pre-wedding kind of catch-up, like, how are you doing? Fourth step, doing the wedding. fifth step is getting a review afterwards. And I use Dubsider to keep myself accountable to those things. Sometimes it's through to-do items. Sometimes it's through project statuses. So every, at least once a week, if not more, I'll go through all of my couples that I haven't got annoying from yet, and I'll just look in and see where are we at email-wise. Like, yeah, everyone's got different stories. Like, particularly through COVID, you can't always catch up with people. So I'm trying to get my gnomes in for my couples, and then if we've got a gnome, I'm trying to catch up with them and have planning meetings, and I'm trying to do as much of that as I can now, because when things start opening up, it's going to be nuts. But I feel like I've given a very broad conversation about customer journey, because I realized that we could get really in the weeds really quickly, and I'll probably...
And we have gotten really in the weeds before. Yeah. So, you know, listen to some of our back episodes and you'll find Josh talking way more about the slippery dip.
I'll try and record a fresh video on the slippery dip, because I've got a presentation prepared and I can talk about it forever. But just in reply to Gail's question, I just wanted to answer to that. When I say customer journey, that's what I mean about a really narrow path that everyone would walk down. So that means that they have a great experience, but you also have a great experience. And if you find yourself tearing your hair out because, like, oh, these couples, they're running over me, you know, they're like, you're like a doormat, I would say it's because you probably haven't got a tight customer journey for them to walk down.
Spot on. I'm going to throw something in here that's kind of related but also kind of not. And that is about flexibility. So I run a couple of the OPD topics that I run this year have touched on this a little bit. One of them's called managing difficult clients. And something that's come up quite a bit is about celebrants talking about the need to be flexible in order to work with different kinds of couples. To me, there's a limit to that flexibility. So exactly like Josh was talking about with his information pack, if you're not this kind of person, we're not going to have a good time working together. So actually, it's better that you go and work with someone else rather than me try to be overly flexible in order to get that work, because I'm not going to have a good time and you're probably not going to have a good experience either. So as an example, I've talked about this before. In order to build the couple's story, I send them a written questionnaire for them to fill out, type their answers, and send them back to me. I have found, me personally, that when I've tried to ask those same questions in a face-to-face meeting, that I haven't received the same kind of full responses that I get in writing. And I've also found that my note-taking isn't quick enough to get down some of the gems that they say and the language that they use. So my personal preference is to send them a written questionnaire. I know other celebrants who hate working with written questionnaires and will only do face-to-face meetings and hearing the story and taking that in and processing that in their head and then jumbling it all together to create the script or the ceremony. So if a couple came to meet with me and they said, we don't want to fill in a written questionnaire, it's actually of no use for me to try to change the way I work and to change the way works for me and my process just to get that job. I'm going to stress about it way more. I'm not going to do my best work and they're not going to have the best experience. So I think that there's a level of flexibility that you can work towards, but I also think that you need to know where your own boundaries are. For me, That's a boundary. That's a hard boundary. If you're not prepared, if you want your story told, only 50% of my couples do. So this is not an issue across the board. But if they want their story told and they're not prepared to fill out a written questionnaire, I am not the celebrant for them. And so one of the beautiful things about the celebrant program in Australia is that there is a celebrant for every couple. You don't have to be it. And in fact, you don't want to be it. Because you can't marry 120,000 couples. That would be a disaster. It would be awful. So I think it's actually okay to say, no, this is my boundary. I have some more boundaries. I will not do a sunrise wedding. Mornings and I, we're not friends. Josh knows all about Mornings and I not being friends. I am not going to do anybody's good work at 7 o'clock in the morning.
She's not talking about sunrise. Like, she's talking about like 9 a.m.
Yeah, even 9 a.m. I'm not good. So I'm not doing a sunrise wedding. I'm also no longer doing beach weddings because I have found that I do a dreadful job when I'm on the beach. I don't like them. It doesn't work for me. We're all going to have a better experience if I send you to a celebrant who loves doing beach weddings. So I think it's okay to not be overly flexible when it comes to things that for you are going to make you uncomfortable, are going to make you not do your best work. Josh's information pack, anybody's marketing should be turning away those people. That's what your website and your social media is for. It's not just to bring in. Anthony Kripis talks about it in his marketing handbook that I use in my cert for. Good marketing should both attract and repel. Yeah,
100%.
And so you want to bring in the people who want to work with you, and you want to repel the people who it's not going to be a good experience for either of you. And I think that that's perfectly reasonable, and we shouldn't try to be everything to everybody.
Yeah, I'm so agreeable with that. That's so very true. Two things I want to get to before we wrap up the episode.
Sure. I think you have three things.
Oh, maybe. Look, I'm not a mathematical genius here.
I mean, you have two things on the list, but then you said you wanted to drop something in that you hadn't told me about.
No, the last thing is drop. Yeah, that's the...
But, okay,
know,
great.
But let's just pull the curtain back and let everyone know what's going on. Okay. Plenty of members of the Celebrant Institute, and even people who aren't members or weren't members, may have experienced some changes to Celebrant Institute membership recently. We moved from a terrible membership software system to a fantastic membership system that involved getting a lot of data out of the old system and moving it to the new system. And I'll be honest with you, wasn't easy. Like, actually, it took a couple of weeks of work. It's funny with these things. Like, we make not a whole lot of money off the Celebrant Institute. We do appreciate your memberships and your payments, and it's a blessing. But I'm like, all the time I've put into this bloody membership software, it better pay off. So, a couple of things are going down membership software wise. One of them is that, I think every single person will have to reset their password. So if you haven't logged on to the Celebrant Institute, or if you try to, your old password won't work. Your user account actually currently has zero password or no password, and if you try to log in, you've got to reset it. So that's number one.
So you need to click the forgot my password button.
Okay, number two, it turns out that a couple of people who weren't actually members, who are you guys, that weren't actually members but had made purchases through the store over a certain time period, and I actually don't know what time period, so I actually can't narrow it down, but a certain number of people who did that were mistaken as members and may have been charged a renewal fee on the 31st of July. If you're one of those people and you don't want to be a member, no hard feelings. A little bit, but
no hard feelings,
just slight hard feelings. But I know, no, I'm joking.
We get it. It's fine.
Not everyone has to be a member, but if you're that person, please get in touch and let us know, and we'll refund it straight away. Third thing, apparently some people haven't realized that the membership is just a renewing thing. It just keeps on renewing until you choose to cancel it. That is the case. So if you do not want to be a member anymore, you have to actively go and or turn it off. Sarah and I, we don't have a membership coordinator. We don't have the time and the resources to kind of like, we're not sitting here manually processing everyone's memberships. There's automatic software that happens in the background. It's all automatically renewed and that kind of thing. So if you don't want to be a member anymore, you have to log on and go to my account, aka your account. Don't go to my account because I don't pay. I get a freebie. So go to your account and you have to cancel the renewing subscription. So that's a thing. If you're on an annual or a monthly membership, you want to move to the other. So if you're on annual, you want to go to monthly. If you're on monthly, you want to go to annual. You can do that now by logging onto your account. You can change that. And another thing you can do in there is you can actually gift a subscription. If you want to give a gift of a subscription, like maybe your business is doing okay, but you know a celebrant isn't doing that fine. If you go to our FAQ page, so celebrant.institute/FAQ, F-A-Q, frequently asked questions, that answers a lot of questions on there, but one of them is how to gift a subscription. And so you can click that link there. I think I covered off all the issues. Oh, sorry, one more issue. If you are a member and you get an email about having to renew your membership. Kirk, one of our friends in Perth, I was messaging with him yesterday. He had to re-enter his credit card details, but then also we had to reactivate his membership. And so, look, there's a couple of teething issues here, but what it means is that Sarah and I don't have to spend as much time and effort managing the Celebrant Institute, and we're more able to actively answer your questions and to write articles and make this podcast and do all the things that you guys want us to do. So a couple of teething issues, but that's why we're there. That's why we've made the move, because the new membership system allows us to do bigger and brighter things. And I know Sarah and you and I have been talking about adding a few things to membership, and we'll be more able to do them with the new membership software. Have I listed all the issues with membership? I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. So just yell out if you have any issues, like if you get a weird email, if you get a weird charge, if you get anything, just forward it to hello@celebrant.institute and we'll sort it out for you. It's absolutely no drama. We expect there to be issues for the next month or so. So please don't feel concerned about asking us those questions.
Can I also, like I mentioned Kirk before, but I wanted to give a 10-point praise to Kirk because not only is he a great bloke, but he asked a question, hey, is this a scam or is it you guys? And I'm like, I'm so proud of him for asking, because I always get surprised when people get pulled in by scam emails or scam, all the scams. And I'm like, because I look at every email I get, oh, is this legitimate? And Kirk obviously does the same. And so, like, 10 points for being intelligent. It's just good.
Yeah, nice
really
work.
Good work.
And we got a similar email yesterday from somebody who had purchased something in the shop, and then she was charged for a membership this month. And she did the same thing. Hey, I'm just worried that this is a scam. I don't want you guys to be getting scammed either, so I'm just pointing it out to you. Thank you. Awesome. It was a mistaken charge, but at least we could sort it out for them. But yay for thinking about those things.
Massive,
for sure.
Massive yay. And on the membership, if you're listening and you're not a member, you're like, what do I actually get? Because I know that there's a lot of stuff going around the celebrant world and everyone's trying to make a buck here and there. And Sarah and Sarah and my thing with the Celebrant Institute is that is a clear-cut value for it. $10 a month, and you get to ask questions of Sarah and I, business related, ceremony related, legality, marriage law, that kind of thing. We certainly don't replace the BDM, but we're probably a little bit easier to contact than the BDM or the Attorney General's office. We reply to emails pretty bloody quickly. That so often Sarah and I are messaging at 9 p.m. on a Saturday night, and like we're like, we should not be working right now. But here we are. Here we are answering Jack's question on notices of intent. So that's what you get access to. You get access to us. And the reason we put a price on it is because we have great value to share with everyone, but we can't answer everyone's email. We can't answer everyone's questions. So I've said, look, if you'd like to have access to it like that, we just ask that you be a member. And a lot of the posts, so a lot of the questions we ask results as a post on the membership blog. And then sometimes I just think of things I'd like everyone to know, and we also write them on the membership blog. So that's the value. There's other things we talk about, and we might do other things soon. But we just want the Institute to be valuable to you. And if you think the things we could add to it, then let us know. But we think we got a pretty good deal. We think it's a really great opportunity for people just to to become and be a really good celebrant.
I'd also like to just say that there are over 300 posts on the Celebrant Institute right now, and we do not expect you to have read them all. So sometimes somebody will send a question and I'll go, oh, hey, I've answered that, and I'll just give them the link, and they'll come back and apologize for not having seen it. No. That wasn't so that you needed to apologize. It was just so I didn't have to type it out again because I've already said it. I don't expect you all to remember over 300 posts worth of information or to scroll through to find the answer. We're okay to just give you those links, but we've done the work once and, you know, we're not going to do it again. But we don't need to apologize at all for not having seen it. It's totally fine.
Part of the reason that we publish questions and answers on the website
is for that very reason.
And hopefully, maybe at some day we'll have, like, the Bible for celebrancy, and we're like, oh, we've done it. We've answered every question. And we'll publish it as a book and then just walk away into the sunset.
That's never going to happen, ever. There's a new video that I've been making some video content for my Cert 4 students, and I thought I'd whack it up on the Celebrant Institute as well.
Just whack it up on the web.
Just whack it up. So I popped a video up there about how I run a rehearsal on Thursday, and that's got some ceremony logistics stuff in it as well. And there's one coming next week about my gear. Josh obviously is horrified with my PA system. He will one day do his own gear video, but lots of people ask me the question, so it's there. That's coming next week.
All right. Are you ready for my game changer?
Sure.
My game changer, if I was to use correct English, my enunciation is a little bit off. A couple that I married who have since become friends now live across the road from us, so literally across the Gold Coast Highway. And he messages me the other day and he goes, hey, are you a GP? And I said, look, I'm not a GP, like I am not a Justice of the Peace. However, there's a fairly large cross-section of things that we can both do, like witnessing documents. There's a lot of documents that I can witness that a JP can witness, and also obviously a JP can witness annoying. And I was thinking through COVID times, I know through my local shopping centers, a lot of the JP services have been shut down because they are quite often run by elderly members of the community. And so those people are not going into public. They're socially distancing, just staying at home. I wanted to pose the question to you, Sarah, because I actually haven't done the research, and I thought I'll just drop it on the podcast as a bit of a wrap-up conversation. Obviously, celebrants aren't JPs, and we are not to masquerade as JPs. However, is there community value in for our direct local community, the suburb or the town where we live, to market to some way that we can fulfill some of the roles that a JP would operate, mainly just witnessing documents and yeah, like a over.
I'm going
like
to stop
a,
you right there.
Yeah,
stop.
Okay, go.
Stop.
Go.
The major difference is that JPs are state appointments and we are federal appointments. So therefore, we can witness Commonwealth documents. JPs can witness state documents. JPs can often also witness Commonwealth documents because that has been the arrangement, but we cannot often witness state documents.
We can witness a stat deck, though.
That's a Commonwealth stat deck. We can't witness a state stat deck. We can in Victoria because the Oaths Act changed last year or 2 years ago, but you'd have to check in Queensland whether you could witness a Queensland stat deck. Because there's a different stat deck for Queensland state issues. So my concern about marketing yourself that way would be that there are actually significant differences in our powers, and that it would be not great for us to confuse the world when we are probably just as confused.
Yeah, and I hear you on that. If we were to affirm that there was a list of things we could do, though.
One more thing I'm jumping in with.
Yeah.
JPs are not allowed to charge money for their services.
No, we are. But I'm not actually suggesting charging money for it.
Sure. So, yes, if you could, the problem is that every single different document has different rules. So there's nowhere that says, here's a list of all the documents that a celebrant can witness. Here's a list of all the documents that a JP can witness. Every document has different rules. So, for example, if you needed to get your photo certified for a university application, that university will have its own rules about who can certify that photo as true and accurate, or about who can witness your signature on their document. And it is really irrelevant where that university is based. They're going to have their own rules. And some of them might say on their list of people, Queensland JPs. Some of them might say Commonwealth marriage celebrants, but it's not across the board. Every university will have the same list. So I think that I get this question a lot. What can we witness? What's the general rule of thumb? There isn't one. And that's the problem, that when you start putting up your hand and saying, hey, I can witness documents, I can certify things as true and accurate, you have to look at every single different document on its own.
But we can accurately say marriage celebrants can witness NOIMS for other people, yes, as well. And correct. And witness
Commonwealth stat decks.
Yep. And I'm actually just trying to pad out for a few seconds to try and find I'm on the Queensland Government website. Who can witness?
So the Victorian Oaths Act changed in, I think it was 2018, to say that Commonwealth marriage celebrants could now witness Victorian stat decks and various other Victorian government documents.
Yeah, so they've made a recent change in Queensland to read the Department of Justice and Attorney General website, in Queensland, statutory declarations normally need to be taken and signed in the physical presence of a lawyer, JP, commissioner for declarations, notary public or conveyancer. And it says, see the Oaths Act, 1867. Oh, my God. The Oaths Act of 1867. That's 253 years old. God. So those people. However, physical distancing requirements make it difficult for these documents to be made. Thanks to a temporary regulation, you can now make a stat deck in the physical presence of any person who can take a Commonwealth statutory declaration. These Great. Must be signed on paper and not electronically.
Great. And that's awesome, because that is a really long list, including physios, chiropractors, nurses, accountants, engineers, blah, blah, blah. It's a really long list. So that's a really great. But again, you can see that that's only temporary.
It is
generally
temporary, yeah.
A Queensland stat deck can only be witnessed by those five qualifications, and a marriage celebrant is not one of them. A Commonwealth marriage celebrant is not one of them. So my only concern about putting that out to the market would be them coming to you with a document and going, well, you said you could witness documents, and then you're looking at it going, yeah, but I'm not listed there, sorry.
Yeah. And look, I still think that there's room to do this intelligently, like use your head. Because I've considered putting just a subpage on my website, and just market, like, not marketing, but just like listing on Google and seeing what happens for my direct suburb I live in Palm Beach, and saying, look, if a marriage celebrant is on the list, I'm available. So like if you deem that a Commonwealth registered marriage celebrant can be the person that witnesses that thing, then like I'm here, and like just send me an email. Nine times out of 10, I can just walk out. Like we've got a little reception in our building, and it's quite easy to kind of sign things there.
Remember as well, though, that you can't rely on them that decision.
So, like, when you see the document, you look at it and...
Yeah, correct. Get them to email you the document or send a photo of it so they don't make a trip to see you when it's not possible. So, for example, I'm working with a celebrant at the moment who has a couple on the other side of town, and they're trying to get their notice witnessed, and they are arguing that her boss, who is a vet, counts as a commissioner for declarations under the Stat Deck Act, because vets can witness a stat deck, even though a commissioner for declarations is not a person who can witness a stat deck. It's a totally different title. So they're arguing quite vehemently that they're right, No, they're not. They're actually not. And we've got, I've given my celebrant friend all of the evidence from the guidelines and from other things that I've sent to her that say, no, you're not right. But don't ever trust the client on that. Get them to snap a photo of it, of the list of people who can witness or certify or whatever, and text it to you. Have a look at it and go, yeah, that says marriage celebrant appointed under Section 39 of the Marriage Act 1961, because that's what it will say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely just be careful with it, though. And also, you know, there's also some people who won't accept a document if it hasn't been stamped. So I signed a stat deck for somebody years ago, and they came back and said, oh, the people that I needed it for wouldn't accept it because you didn't put a stamp on it. I'm like, it doesn't require a stamp and I don't have one. But so that's something else to be aware of as well.
Yeah, because there's
some people don't know what they're doing.
There's so many weird elements to signing documents. Like the stat deck that I signed, which was a Commonwealth stat deck, it wasn't – like, you know how you can get the Word template for a stat deck and it's pretty and proper and, you know, they feel like, you know, I, Josh Withers. Like, it wasn't that. It was like the bank, I think NAB, had sent it to her and she'd filled it out properly. But the document was all like pixelated and crappy. Oh. And I said, look, this doesn't look like any stat deck I've ever seen. I would not be surprised if it came back to you. And if so, like, yeah, because they're friends, I said, I'll help you out.
We've Bring it back.
You know, we've got a template and blah, blah, blah. It's funny, the whole witnessing thing. But I just thought, like, if there's an opportunity there, it might be a nice way just to kind of just cement yourself as a helpful person in the local community.
Totally.
And say, hey, here's the things I can do. I can do things.
Totally. You do also have to be a little bit more prepared to say where you live when you do things like that.
True. Yeah.
And some celebrants are also not prepared to do that. But if you're willing to do that, if you're wanting to be helpful, then yes, absolutely. And because, I mean, we're in Melbourne, none of the police stations are open for witnessing documents. So
none of the police stations are open?
No. So they're not accepting visitors to police stations except for like urgent matters, and witnessing a NOIM would not count as an urgent matter. So, it's an infection control thing. It's for the GPs. It's not just about them being elderly and needing to be isolated. It's also because we know the virus lives on paper for at least 24 hours. We know that it can live on the pen. So it's an infection control measure.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's why I've been trying to get the AGD to come back and say, yes, you can witness NOIMs by Skype, but they haven't done that yet.
They've really kind of pulled back on
dragging
that,
their feet. Yeah, it's disappointing, but anyway,
because the last status point on that was that the Attorney General Registrar, the Registrar of Marriage Celebrants, have I got the title right for Bridget? Yeah, Registrar of Marriage Celebrants, was taking it to the Commonwealth Attorney General or the office of, or whoever that works, and that
three
was
and
a
half
number of
weeks
months ago.
So that happened back in April.
That was start of May. I think.
Yeah,
I
they were planning to do that, and then
like May 2 or 3.
Everybody started opening up again, so they went, well, I guess we don't need to worry about that anymore. But as soon as Melbourne closed down again, I wrote to them and said, okay, we've closed down. Can you please revisit this? And they went, yeah, we're thinking about it.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Anyway. All right. Sarah, it's been a great chat today. Thanks for the opportunity to catch up and record something. You and I talk
always
daily anyway, but to actually sit down and just record some celebrant chat.
Always good.
If there's something we haven't talked about, you're like, I can't believe you guys didn't talk about that. It's probably because you didn't email us to say, please, Sarah and Josh, please talk about this. And the main way you can do that is by emailing hello@celebrant.fm. And not only has that got an email address in it, you might have noticed there's a domain name in there, celebrant.fm, which is where, wait for it, this is going to blow your mind, you can listen to the podcast. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's amazing. Celebrant.fm is where you can find all the links to subscribe in your favorite app. I personally love Overcast, but you're welcome to use whatever you like. Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Anchor, we're on Pocket Cast, we're on what do you use, Sarah? What's your
I'm
app
an
of
Overcast
choice?
Girl too. Oh, I'm Overcast too.
I moved you over, God.
You did. You moved me over years ago. I love Overcast. It's great.
There we go. Yeah. So find your own podcast app. Like, your phone's probably got one built in. But all the links are at celebrant.fm. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for joining us on the Facebook Live. If you're watching the Facebook Live, you might notice it's a little bit more raw than the edited podcast that goes out. I do try to make the podcast sound a little higher kind of production. But yeah, it's been a great chat, a great episode. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you all soon.
Story became old.